Question: Is the term Atma overloaded to mean different things in different context? It normally means the soul, but does it also refer to the super soul, the supreme? Why is Atma translated as the Lord in text 5 of the Ishopanishad? Answer: In general, the meanings of words are not statically stored in dictionaries. They are dynamically determined by usage. This is a fundamental point in the philosophy of language, that are words simply like pipes that convey meaning from the speaker to the hearer? Or thus, for example, we have the verse Isha Vasividam Sarvam Yat Kinchi Jagatyam Jagat Tena Diktena Bhunjita Magrudha Kasya Svittanam. We have a similar verse, Atma Vasividam Sarvam Yat Kinchi Jagatyam Jagat Tena Diktena Bhunjita Magrudha Kasya Svittanam. This occurs in the 8th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, wherein Manu is praying to Yajna, Supreme Lord. So now, Isha refers to the controller. If Atma comes in that context, then Atma cannot refer to the Jiva. Atma refers to the self or the soul. Now, the self or the soul is normally associated with our inner essence. But self or soul can also have a broader essence, broader meaning, depending on the context. Or the self of what? If it is the self of the world, that is different than the self of me. Self of the universe, self of all of existence is different. The word Atma in the Bhagavad Gita also has different meanings. For example, there are at least 3-4 meanings. Uddharay Atmanatmanam Natmanam Avisadayet Atmayo Yatmano Bandur Atmayi Varipuratmanaha. So if you can take the Atma to refer only to the self or the soul, then this verse means elevate the self with the self, don't degrade the self with the self. Self is the friend of the self and the self is the enemy of the self. This is also a translation which is given by the Samacharyas, where they talk about the observer self and the experiencer self, and where we can, there is a part of us that experiences and the part of us that observes the experience, and we need to intelligently mold our experiences in such a way that, or rather interpret or respond to our experiences in such a way that we can elevate ourselves and not degrade ourselves. So, but the Srila Prabhupada uses this Atma, one Atma, to refer to the mind, and that is justified entirely from the context, because the next verse clearly talks about the mind being the friend of the enemy. Bandhur Atma Atmanastasya Yena Atmanivatmana Ajitaha Anatmanasu Shatrutve Varte Tatmeva Shatruvat. So here it is said that the mind is the friend for those who have controlled it, and the mind remains the enemy for those who have failed to control it. So in the previous verse itself, the word it was the Atma that was described to be the friend or the enemy. And this verse, it is the Mana that is described as the friend or the enemy. So in that context, it is perfectly reasonable to say that the Atma refers here to the Mana. And it's not just the context, it's also the import, the content. That the whole verse makes greater sense if we use the word Atma to refer to the Mana. Now, if we look at the Bhagavad Gita, also the usage of Atma is referring to something bigger than ourselves, is there Sarvabhutastama Atmanam Sarvabhutani Chatmani Ikshate Yoga Yukta Atma Sarvatra Samadarshanaha. We see all existence situated in the Atma, and we see the Atma situated in all of existence. And then that same describer of relationship of being present in everything and everything being present in that thing, that is described in the next verse, 6.30, the previous was 6.29, 6.30, and it is said here to apply to Krishna. Yo mam paschati sarvatra sarvam cha mai paschati tasya ham na pranashyami sa cha mai na pranashyati. So one who sees me in everything and everything in me. So this is exactly what was used in the previous verse to describe the Atma. Sarvabhutastamatmanam sarvabhutani chatmani yomam paschati sarvatra sarvam cha mai paschati. So the inference could be that whatever is used, the description is as the feature of Atma described in 6.29 is described as the feature of the of mam, me, in 6.30. And then the next verse says that we are need to see the equality of both. Sarvabhutasthamatmanam sarvabhutani chatmani. Sorry. Sarvabhutasthitam yomam bhajatya ekastvamastitaha sarvathamartmanopi sayogi mai vartate. Sarvabhutasthitam yomam. So there is something which is described in 6.30 and especially 29 as being situated in all living beings. And Krishna now says that one who understands that sarvabhutasthitam yo mam bhajate ekatvamasitam, one who sees the oneness between me and that which is situated in all living beings, that Atma which is situated in all living beings, so that person's yogi mai vartate. Sarvatha vartamanopi is a yogi. So sarvatha vartamanopi, such a person is well situated in all situations. Now, does this mean that Krishna and Atma are one? No, that does not necessarily mean, because Krishna has in 6.30 says that one, we have to see him everywhere and then we will never be lost. You know, if we identify ourselves with him, then we would be lost. There will be no conception of we as existent. But what Krishna is, the series of verses indicates, if you look at the literal translation, 6.29 is saying that all being is situated in the Atma and the Atma is situated in all being. And Krishna says that one who sees me everywhere and sees everything in me, that person is never lost. And then the last verse says that one who sees the Atma as non-different from me is never lost. The yogi is well situated and never falls. That means Krishna is referring to the Atma and him as one, and the two are pursued by us. Because are pursued by a third person, which is us, which is the seeker who has arisen to the level of becoming a seer. That's what is mentioned in 6.29 and 30, that there is someone who is perceiving that the Atma is situated in everyone and Krishna is situated in everyone. So that means the oneness of the Atma referred to in 6.29 and Krishna doesn't refer to the Atma who is the perceiver. It refers to the, so the perceiver, ikshate, one who is seeing, is we, the seeker, and the Atma that is being referred to there is actually the supreme being. So this is an example in the Bhagavad Gita itself of where Atma refers to the supreme. So to understand what words mean, we need to look not just the dictionaries but also the context and then understand the meaning of words. Now coming to the Ishopanishad verse, if you see the context is clearly referring to the supreme being. The Ishopanishad starts with Isha Vasyavidam Sarvam, that it is first talks about supreme reality in the location Om Purnamada Purnamidam, and then Isha Vasyam, that everything belongs to Isha, it doesn't belong to us. The fourth verse is also talking about some being higher than us, Anija Dekam Manasojaviyo Naina Deva Apnun Purnam Arshat. So that Lord who is so moves so fast that nobody can catch him, nobody can approach him, that supreme being who is there, that is being described. And then the next verse, when the word Atma is used with similar features, Atmanyevanu pashyastu sarvani bhutani Atmanyevanu pashyastu sarvabhuteshu chatmanam tato navijugupsate. So this mantra 6 of the Ishopanishad is very similar to 6.29 in the Bhagavad Gita. And we just discussed 6.29 refers to Bhagavan Krishna. So here also it's perfectly reasonable to say that 6.29, that mantra 6 of the Ishopanishad refers to Atma. and not to the Paramatma. Here it refers to the Paramatma, not the Atma, so the super soul, not the soul itself. Because not only is there a parallel to this in another scripture, but on the context also, what is being discussed in the previous verse. And so the section starts with that verse. So the mantra 4 and 5, we are talking about the absolute truth, who is referred to as supreme being, who is self-sufficient, who is referred to in the second person, tadejati tannaijati. And then the verse 8 will also talk about the absolute truth itself, saparega chukramakayam abram. So if you look at the overall section from 4 to 8, it is talking about the absolute truth. And so the Atma here also refers to the absolute truth. Thank you.